everyone.
Good morning, David.
Everyone awake and ready?
Awake and ready.
Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Perfect joy that I feel today being here. Guru Purnima Day is a special day of honoring the Guru. As such, I thought to read from you from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Master Mahasya is the author, and he took detailed day by day notes of his meeting with the great master and subsequent times when he went to see him, and all the events described in simplicity and sublimity. And I thought his description of meeting his master, his guru, is emblematic of what it is to feel the meeting of that one who is to have such a special connection with you in a lifetime. It's dated February 1882. It was on a Sunday in spring, a few days after Sri Ramakrishna's birthday, that M met him the first time. Sri Ramakrishna lived in Kalabari, the temple garden of the Mother Kali on the bank of the Ganges at Dakshineshwar. M, being at leisure on Sundays, had gone with his friend Sidhu to visit several gardens at Barangor. As they were walking in the Prasanna Banerjee's garden, Sidhu said, "There is a charming place on the bank of the Ganges where a Paramahansa lives. Should you like to go there?" M assented, and they immediately started for Dakshineshwar Temple Garden. They arrived at the main gate at dusk and went straight away to Sri Ramakrishna's room. And there they found him, seated on a wooden bench, facing the east. With a smile on his face, he was talking of God. The room was full of people, all seated on the floor, drinking in the words in deep silence. M, as Master Mahasya refers to himself, stood there speechless and looked on. It was as if he were standing where all the holy places met, as if Sukadev himself were speaking the word of God, or as Sri Chaitanya were singing the name and glories of the Lord in Puri, with Ramadan and Swarup and other devotees. Sri Ramakrishna said, "When hearing the name of Hari or Rama once, you shed tears and your hair stands on end, then you may know for certain that you do not have to perform such devotions as the Sandhya anymore. Then only will you know you have the right to renounce rituals, or rather rituals will drop away of themselves. Then it will be enough if you repeat only the name of Rama or Hari or simply Om." Continuing, he said, "The Sandhya merges in the Gayatri, and the Gayatri merges in Om." M looked around him with wonder and said to himself, "What a beautiful place! What a charming man! How beautiful his words, and I have no wish to move from this spot." After a few minutes, he thought, "Let me see the place first, then I'll come back here and sit down." As he left the room with Sidhu, he heard the sweet music of the evening service arising in the temple from the gong, bell, drum, and cymbal. He could hear the music of the nabha, too, in the south of the garden. The sounds traveled all over the Ganges, floating away and losing themselves in the distance. A soft wind was blowing, laden with the fragrance of flowers. The room had just appeared. The moon had just appeared. It was as if nature and man together were preparing for the evening worship. Am and Sidhu visited the 12 Shiva temples and the Radhakanda temple and the temple of Vadatrayani. And as Am watched the services before the images, his heart was filled with joy. On the way back to Sri Ramakrishna's room, the two friends talked. Sidhu told M that the temple garden had been founded by Rani Rasmani. He said that God was worshipped there daily as Kali, Krishna, and Siva, and that within the gates many sadhus and beggars were fed. When they reached Sri Ramakrishna's door again, they found it shut, and Brinde, the maid, standing outside. M, who had been trained in English manners and would not enter a room without permission, asked her, "Is the holy man in?" Brinde replied, "Yes, he is in the room." "How long has he lived here?" "Oh, he has been here a long time." "Does he read many books?" "Books? Oh, dear, no. They are all on his tongue." M had just finished his studies in college. It amazed him to hear that Sri Ramakrishna read no books. "M, perhaps it is time for his evening worship. May we go into the room? Will you tell him we are anxious to see him?" Brinda, "Go right in, children. Go in and sit down." Entering the room, they found Sri Ramakrishna alone, seated on the wooden bench. Incense had just been burnt and all the doors were shut. As he entered, M, with folded hands, saluted the master. Then, at the master's bidding, he "Where do you live? What is your occupations? Why have you come to Barangor?" M answered the questions, but he noticed that now and then the master seemed to become absent-minded. Later he learnt that this mood is called bhava, ecstasy. It is like the state of an angler who has been sitting with his rod. The fish comes and swallows the bait, and the float begins to tremble. The angler is on alert. He grips the rod and watches the float steadily and eagerly. He will not speak to anyone. Such was the state of Sri Ramakrishna's mind. Later, M heard and himself noticed that Sri Ramakrishna would often go into this mood after dusk, sometimes becoming totally unconscious of the outer world. "M, perhaps you want to perform your evening worship. Is that the case? May we take our leave?" Sri Ramakrishna is still in ecstasy. "No, evening worship? No, it is not exactly that." After a little conversation, M saluted the master and took his leave. "Come again," Sri Ramakrishna said. On his way home, M began to wonder, "Who is this serene-looking man who is drawing me back to him? Is it possible for a man to be great without being a scholar? How wonderful it is. I should like to go see him again." And himself said, "Come again. I shall go tomorrow or the day after." M's second visit to Sri Ramakrishna took place on the southeast veranda at 8 o'clock in the morning. The master was about to be shaved, the barber having just arrived. As the cold season still lingered, he had put on a moleskin shawl bordered with red. Seeing M, the master said, "So, you have come. That's good. Sit down, here." He was smiling. He stammered a little when he spoke. Sri Ramachandra to M, "Where do you live?" Sri Ramakrishna, to M, "Where do you live?" "In Calcutta, sir." "Where are you staying here?" I'm staying at Barangor at my eldest sister's, Ishan's house. Ramakrishna, oh, at Ishan's. Well, how is Kashab now? He was very ill. Indeed, I have heard so too, but I believe he will be well now. Ramakrishna, I made a vow to worship the mother with green coconut and sugar in Kashab's recovery. Sometimes in the early hours of the morning, I would wake up and cry before her, Mother, please make Kashab well again. If Kashab doesn't live, then whom shall I talk to when I go to Calcutta? And so it was that I resolved to offer her the green coconut and sugar. Tell me, do you know of a certain Mr. Cook who has come to Calcutta? Is it true that he is giving lectures? Once Kashab told me on a street, and this Mr. Cook, too, was in the party. Yes, sir, I have heard something like that. I have never been to his lectures. I don't know much about him. Ramakrishna, perhaps Pratap's brother came here. He stayed a few days. He had nothing to do, and he wanted to live here. I came to know that he had left his wife and children with his father-in-law. He has a whole brood of them. So I took him to task. Just fancy. He is the father of so many children. Will people from the neighborhood feed them and bring them up? He isn't even ashamed that someone else is feeding his wife and children, and that they have been left in the father-in-law's care. I scolded him very hard and asked him to look for a job. Then he was willing to leave here. Are you married? Yes, sir. Sri Ramakrishna with a shudder. Oh, Ramlal, he's married, alas. Like one guilty of a terrible offense, M stood sat motionless, his eyes fixed on the ground. He thought, is it such a wicked thing to get married? The master continued, have you any children? M this time could not bear the bearing of his own heart, beating of his own heart. He whispered in a trembling voice, yes, sir, I have children. Very sadly, Sri Ramakrishna, ah me, he even has children. Thus rebuked, M. sat speechless. His pride had received a blow. After a few minutes, Sri Ramakrishna looked at him kindly and said affectionately, you see, you have certain good signs. I know them by looking at a person's forehead, his eyes, and so on. Tell me now, what kind of person is your wife? Has she spiritual attributes? Is she under the power of avidya, ignorance? M. She is all right, but I am afraid she is ignorant. Master, with evident displeasure, and you are a man of knowledge? To this time, his conception had been one got knowledge from books and schools. Later on, he gave up this false conception. He was taught that to know God is knowledge, and not to know him is ignorance. When Sri Ramakrishna exclaimed, and you are a man of knowledge, M's ego was again badly shocked. Well, do you believe in God with form or without form? M, rather surprised, said to himself, how can one believe in God with form, without form, when one believes in God with form? And if one believes in God without form, how can one believe that God has form? Can these two contradictory ideas be true at the same time? Can a white liquid like milk be black? Sir, I like to think of God as formless. Very good. It is enough to have faith in either aspect. You believe in God without form, that is all right. But never for a moment think that this is alone is true and all else is false. Remember that God is without form. Is with form just as true as God is without form. But hold fast to your own conviction. The assertion that both were equally true amazed M. He had never learnt this from his books. Thus his ego received a third blow. But since this is what not quite completely crushed yet, he came forward to argue with the master a little more. Sir, suppose one believes in God with form. Certainly he is not the clay image. Master interrupting, but why clay? It is an image of spirit. M could not quite understand the significance of this image of spirit, But, sir, he said to the master, one should explain to those who worship the clay image that it is not God, and that while worshiping, they should not have God in view and not as the clay image. One should not worship clay. Master, sharply. That's the one hobby of you Calcutta people, giving lectures and bringing others to the light. Nobody ever stops to consider how to get the light himself. Who are you to teach others? He who is the Lord of the universe will teach everyone. He alone teaches us who has created this universe, who has made the sun and the moon, men and beasts and all other beings, who has provided means for their sentence, substance, who has given children parents and endowed them with love to bring them up. The Lord has done so many things. Will he not show people the way to worship him? If they need teaching, then he will be the teacher. He is the inner guide. Suppose there is an error in worshiping the clay image. Doesn't God know that through it he alone is being invoked? He will be pleased with the very worship. Why should you get a headache over it? You had better try for knowledge and devotion yourself. This time, M felt that his ego was completely crushed. He now said to himself, yet he has spoken the truth. What need is there for me to teach others? Have I known God? Do I really love him? I haven't room enough for myself in my bed, and I am inviting my friend to share it with me? I know nothing about God, yet I am trying to teach others. What a shame, how foolish I am. This is not mathematics or history or literature that one can teach it to others. No, this is the deep mystery of God. What he says appeals to me. This was M's first argument with the master, and happily his last. The guru-disciple relationship is mysterious. Why does it come to us when it does? What purpose does it serve? And who is the guru really? When we are ready to know on a soul level who and what God is, then God arranges for the guru to come. Now, why a guru? Why a person? As the master here teaches, God will come to you personally and reveal the truth to you. And yet, in this case, we see that Ramakrishna is the vehicle of God to correct and help uplift his new disciple, Master Mahasya. We know from Master and him writing about Master Mahasya what a great master he was. What a great devotee he was. This was many years later. It was he that Master went to while the Master Mahasya was speaking to the Divine Mother. Yogananda felt the rift between he and the Divine Mother and asked the Master whether the Divine Mother wouldn't come to him. Master Mahasya did not respond right away. But Master was insistent, and he was crying great tears at the feet of the Master. Finally, the Master patted him and said, I'll speak to the Divine Mother. And that very night, at 10 p.m., Master sat in his little attic room. I've been to that room in his house on 4 Gupar Road in Calcutta. And I can tell you that room is surcharged with spiritual vibration. It was in that very room that Yogananda sat in meditation, devotedly thinking of the Divine Mother. He missed his own mother so much, for she had passed away when he was yet just a little boy. He used to go out and cry tears on her grave. But now he was seeking the solace of the Divine Mother, the Universal Mother. And it may seem strange to us, in the West, to think of God as Divine Mother, but it is very natural in India. And both Yogananda and both Papa love Divine Mother above all other concepts of God. You see, in India, as well as other universally realized beings, it is what draws God close to you. God is both with form, for he has manifested himself as this universe and all the forms within it. And he is beyond form, because he is the universal spirit that is not bound by any particular image or form. And so you may worship God with form or without form. And as the Master says here, God will receive what is in your heart, whether you pray to Jesus or Muhammad or Allah or Buddha or any of the great saints or masters. When your heart is pure, that prayer ascends directly to God. And this is what all true gurus and all true teachers teach us. And so when we are ready, it comes to us. And that night, the Divine Mother appeared before Yogananda. The next morning, very early, he made his way to Master Mahasya's house and his room, which coincidentally had been his family home earlier, and where his mother had lived with him is now where Master Mahasya lived and had a school for boys. And so he made his way up to the room, and there is a towel wrapped around the handle, and he thought this was a subtle hint not to enter in. But just as he approached the door, Master Mahasya opened it for him. And Master playfully, because he could be a naughty little child at times, asked the Master, "What did the Divine Mother say?" Master Mahasya was very humble, and he said, "Oh, sir, you know." And he said, no, tell me. What did he say? What did she say? And he said, "Can I add anything to what was revealed to you by the Divine Mother herself at 10 o'clock last night?" And so he knew that the Divine Mother had come and given him this tremendous vision wherein she promised that she would love him always, that she loved him now, and she had ever loved him. God's love is so great for us. It is a terrible shame that our hearts are so hardened to God, because what we yearn for more than anything else is that love, is to know that we are loved. When God fills your heart with love, it is overwhelming, really. It is more than the cup of the heart can hold, and so it overflows. But in that overflowing of love, it flows out to all creation. It is unlike any other love. All other loves have requirements. "I can only love you if you act a certain way towards me," says the human being. "I can only love you if you are physically present with me. I can only love you if I think that you love me." But God's love is different. God's love is unconditional for us. And when we are filled with that love, it is unconditional because it is not focused towards any particular person or place or thing. It flows out universally. And to feel that love is the greatest thing. Mother used to talk so much when I first came to see her, and always, about the love of God, because that was her approach to God, was to love God. But as she spoke about that, it was a complete mystery to me. I did not feel that I had any love in my own heart. I didn't feel that love towards anybody else. And I certainly couldn't understand how you could feel love toward God. One of the things I did as I read this Gospel of Ramakrishna, I've read through this book so many times. And even now, when I read through this book, after reading a few sentences usually, it lifts me up into such a high state that I cannot read anymore. and I feel the presence of that great master. I had an experience with Ramakrishna when I went to the temple that where his remains are ensconced by Swami Vivekananda. And I sat there meditating on the marble floor. There was an image of the master sitting there. And I closed my eyes and began to meditate. And at some point during my meditation, I was lifted up, and I was lifted up into a great field of light with the master. And I pranamed at his feet. And I felt myself dissolve like sugar in water, just simply dissolving and spreading out into all space. I was like that for some time. When I had started to meditate, there was a great crowd there, and the doors had been opened towards this image of Ramakrishna. When finally I came back down into consciousness, normal consciousness again, I opened my eyes and there was no one around me. They had all left and the doors had been closed. But I had been with the master in spirit. It's a tremendous experience. A tremendous experience. But Mother used to talk about divine love. And so I read this book, and I also read a book called The Perfect Joy of St. Francis. And through these two books, both were imbued with the notion of love, love of God, feeling of God. And my heart grew to breaking because I didn't feel that love, and yet there is something pushing, like from the inside, putting tremendous pressure upon the heart center. And finally, one night, in deep meditation and reverie, I felt the breaking of that knot, the Gordian knot within the heart. And that love flowed forth. And it was unlike anything I had ever experienced in this lifetime. And I was swimming in the dirt. I was caressing the branches and the flowers, everything that I saw. Felt to be scintillating in that ocean of love. And from that point on, to some degree or another, the heart was open to that love. And that love is a perfecting force. As it comes into your heart and spreads and opens itself to the world, it purifies you because you don't come purified from the very beginning. We are of mixed character. And so we have to go through those purifying fires and that purifying energy in order to be released. And so through these experiences, I began to identify with what Mother talked about so much, to love God, to keep your mind on God. I oftentimes thought if you summed up all of her teachings, it could be summed up in that one sentence, keep your mind on God. And it seems simple at its inception, but it's profound, because if you can really put your mind on God and keep it there, then everything is arranged. Everything is done for you. There's the wonderful story of the wood lumberjack who was out in the jungles. And he discovered there a man who was lost. He appeared to be a hunter. And so he took him in. He had been apparently lost for some time, and he was hungry and thirsty and needed rest. And he did everything for him. He didn't have much, but he did everything he could. He fed him. He gave him drink. He let him rest. Unbeknownst to him, this hunter was a king who had been out with his hunting party, dressed in ordinary clothes because he is out hunting. And so when the king finally began to recover, he sent for his men, and they came with a palanquin and took him away. The king was very touched by the notion that this lumberjack had done all of this without any notion of reward or return, just because simply out of his own humanity. And so he sent word to this lumberjack that he's going to come and pay a royal visit. Well, the lumberjack was horrified. He lived in a small hut. He didn't have hardly enough food for himself, much less to entertain a royal retinue. And he had absolutely no idea how to do this. But the king anticipated everything, and he sent the people to construct a beautiful home. He brought all the food, the chefs, the carpets, the furniture, everything that was needed to entertain royalty, and everything was done for the man to prepare for the king. And he just sat in wonder and awe as all of these things were done. And finally, the day came when everything was in a state of completion, and the king arrived, and he was received in the way that a king should be received. Now, this is what God does for us. We are not in a ready state of receptivity for everything that God is. You see, we cannot anticipate all that God is. God is tremendous. That should go without saying, but we don't really comprehend how tremendous the presence of God is and what it demands of this physical vehicle, of the astral or the electrical body, of the causal body. And so when we dedicate ourselves towards God, then God sends all the workmen, he sends all the energies, he sends everything that is required in order for us to be prepared to receive the King of the universe. And through these experiences that God gives to us, we are prepared, we are purified. This is what the Guru does. The Guru means many things to many people. To some, the Guru, when they are unknown to the individual, can appear to be perhaps a pleasant person, an ordinary person. Perhaps they feel a special kind of love, or when that Guru comes by, they feel a kind of peace. I saw that with Mother as we would walk through the Bon Marché, and all these different merchants and clerks knew her. "Oh, Mrs. Hamilton, how are you?" And she would converse with them, and she would meet them exactly where they were at. Whatever department they were in, she could converse with them. And she didn't demand anything of them. She was just simply in her humanity, you might say. And yet, her divinity showed through. There are others who come to the Guru, and they receive some teachings. And they see the Guru as a teacher. And so they take those teachings, and they feel all right about them, or perhaps like Master Mahasya, they may argue a bit about them. But all the teachings are there in order to help that one along, whatever state of consciousness they're in. And then there is another category of disciple, and that one really recognizes the Guru. They see the Guru not just as a pleasant person, not just as an intelligent or wise teacher, but they see within the Guru that infinity, that superior God consciousness. They sense it, they feel it, as Master Mahasya did. He said he felt like he was sitting at the feet of those who wrote the Ramayana or the Vedas. And here was the fount of all wisdom. And it astounded him because this man was not a scholar. He is just a recent college graduate and thought that all real knowledge that was worth knowing came from books. But he realized that wasn't so. He felt the truth. And when the master scolded him and beat down his ego 3 times and then a final crushing blow, he didn't back away a bit. Rather, he surrendered himself. This is a great test. It's a great test. The ego doesn't like to be humbled. But it shows the greatness of soul of Master Mahasya. And this is a requirement to enter into true discipleship, that we have that willingness to surrender. It does not make you a slave of another individual. But rather, you seek to attune yourself to the same divine consciousness that animates the Guru. But if you don't see it, you don't see it. It just simply isn't there for you. Mother Krishnabai used to speak to those who are around Papa. And she says, you enjoy Papa, and he tells funny stories, and you laugh with him, and he plays with you just as a child or as anybody else would. But you do not see who he really is. You see, it is easy to get caught up in the humanity of the guru. You do not see who he really is, because behind the door, behind the mask, behind the face of the guru, there is something different that animates them. Their consciousness is awash with divine consciousness. God permeates them. And when you accept this, then you accept their divinity, and it attunes you to it. This is the magic of it. And you do not become a slave. Rather, it leads you to spiritual freedom. Now, I argued with Mother on just a few occasions. But one of the occasions was a difficult lesson in the moment, but it was a powerful one, and that one that has stayed with me. On a rare occasion, and for the first time, Mother had invited over groups of people to come to her apartment. It was Christmas time, and she had made tea and coffee, and she divided the group up into different smaller groups, and each one came over. There's a very dear disciple to Mother who is taking pictures, and he is also a minister for Mother, and she told him in a fairly stern voice when he is taking pictures, make every one of those pictures perfect. So I thought, oh my gosh, that's a tough one, make every picture perfect. And so I listened to that, and then I had the great joy. Mother took me back into her back rooms, and she was showing me various things. And she told me a story when she was back there. She says, just recently, I made a mistake in my checkbook. But fortunately, the mistake was in my favor. So I came out all right, and I wasn't writing checks on a bank account that couldn't support it. So I put that together with what she was telling this disciple about making every picture perfect. And I was confused by that. How could the guru who does everything perfect make this mistake? And here she was telling somebody else to make every picture perfect. So we came back out into the group, and I brought that question up to Mother. Oh, she just leveled me with her gaze, and she launched right into me about respect for the guru. I didn't feel that I had been disrespectful. But you see, I was arguing with her. It created a doubt in my mind. This worked on me on so many levels because in my own history, my father was a tall, domineering kind of individual, and I worked for him for many years, and he could rake me over the coals in front of God and everyone. He'd say whatever he liked, whenever he liked, and you better like it too, or at least not react to it, or you're in real trouble. And so Mother did this. But it was an amazing thing because I felt held in her love, even while she spoke to me in really powerful terms. And she was also teaching me things that were very practical, that I was interfering with her work with another individual. She had a particular teaching for him, and she had a particular teaching for me. And that it wasn't my place to confuse the two. She oftentimes told us, don't compare notes. I'll tell one person one thing and somebody else something else. It's meant for that individual, and when you compare notes, you'll get confused. And so I was confusing the issues. And I was not really respecting her, not in the deepest sense. I was not allowing her to bring me to that fullest realization. But I took the verbal tongue lashing, and it took me in deeper. And I had to question myself. What was it? What was this respect? Mother oftentimes talked about respect and respecting the guru. We have such a casual society that oftentimes it creates a casual attitude. in my work as a counselor with families. I have seen husband and wife speak to each other in terms they would not speak and use with any other individual. They take liberties. They allow themselves to vent in ways that really are a verbal assault. That's what it amounts to. And we see that now so much in the movies and over all the media, and people imitate it. And we really harm ourselves when we do this. We really don't do ourselves a service, much less the people around us. Respect has to be the cornerstone of every relationship. Respect for the individual, respect for their autonomy, respect for who they are in God. How has God created them? And so it's something to meditate upon. It's something to really take inside. You know, we want others to respect us, but we don't give respect to others in the way that we should. We have to learn more about this and take it deeper. Everything that the Guru does is intended to lead us toward God. Even in Mother and these simple teachings that she gave to me about her checkbook, she was telling me that on a human level, things that could appear to be a mistake, but she turned that into a teaching with me. She was teaching me about what a God-realized state was really all about. And it wasn't about achieving some level of perfection in the way that we think of it as a human being. From a human being standpoint, we would think if one was God-realized, perhaps, they would never make a mistake, they would never misstate themselves, that they would always be free of any kind of illness, any kind of difficulty, that they would have no problems whatsoever. Because, you see, we're thinking of perfection as something that's physical, not spiritual. It's the material mind that takes it and puts it that way. And so the Guru comes in that way. Now, I've told you before that in the last 3 months, God has taken me through some tremendous experiences. A circle of fire that has inflamed me and that has burned without respite. It's been a tremendous experience, and this last week it started to abate. And it's allowed me to be able to start to do things again. Yesterday I was up on the roof, and I was cleaning off the roof, and I was coming down on the ladder, and I was holding a large blower in one hand and had some thongs on, so I didn't have the proper shoes on, and as I took a step, the thongs started to slip off, and I started falling backwards. And it flashed through my mind, I grabbed for the ladder, but the ladder started going with me. And so we were both going backwards, and it flashed through my mind that there were bricks in our kitchen garden just below where I would be falling, and I thought that probably wouldn't be a good thing for my head to land on. So I pushed off from the ladder and went backwards and fell flat on my back about 10 feet down on the ground. Fortunately, I landed on the grass. And so it was a wonderful experience because God worked through the mind in pretty rapid order and brought me out all right. And then Carla reminded me to do a little bit of tapping because I could feel the body was in a little bit of shock from the fall. And then that took away all the shock from the body. And so God takes care of us. But everything that we do in God consciousness is perfect, you see. And even if it results in something that appears to be imperfect from a human standpoint. Now, this can be misused if we do not apply the first, and that is that we are in God consciousness. We have achieved a union with God, a oneness with God. And then everything that we do is all meant to bring all creation to the highest level of vibration, because you yourself are living in that highest level of vibration. Now, in no way can this be a statement from the ego if it is true. It is just fact. It is just so. And it is verifiable through the experience that God gives you. And it is perfect. I cannot tell you with what gratitude and with what love I feel for Mother in my life. Of all the personalities, of all the individuals that I have met, hers stands out like the Grand Himalayas in comparison to any others that are just lowly hills. Not all just lowly, but hers was the most tremendous, most terrific. And it has inspired me to follow God, to know God, even as she knew God. When she spoke, I remember thinking to myself, I want to know from the same state of consciousness that she knows. Now, I don't pretend that I have achieved that, because who she is in God is something terrific, I can tell you. It's almost as if you have to get up on a little height yourself to appreciate how tremendously high another peak is. And then you see how much taller it is than even where you stand at the present height. She is tremendous. She teaches not only those who are here, but those who exist on other planets. She is universal. And she brings to this world, for those who will attune themselves to her, the most powerful spiritual vibrations that are absolutely pure. This I can tell you from my own experience. We also mark the day of Babaji's Remembrance Day, and it is the day that Babaji appeared to Master before he left India to come to America. Master wouldn't set foot towards America without first receiving Babaji's blessings, because he had some concern that he could get caught up in the world of the West and he could lose his spiritual attainment. But Babaji assured him that it was he who had called him, and it is he who is sending him to the West. Now, in one sense, in a guru lineage, the guru is the manifestation of all those who came before. When you touch the fabric of God consciousness, it puts you in touch with everything that God is. And when you feel that touch, when you feel that fabric, it makes you know that God is indeed universal. He could not be circumscribed by a particular church, by a particular political movement, by a particular person. It's not possible, nor is it desirable. Wherever you go, you look to find that divine spark within all those whom you see and you meet. You look for those kindred spirits because it's a wonderful thing. And yet we feel our own spiritual affinity and attunement with our own guru and guru lineage. This is right, and it should be so. But it should not blind us to the universality that God manifests in all through all. And we should learn to recognize the truth and divine teachings wherever we find them. This is so. This is so. When Master came, there are some differences, apparently, between the Ramakrishna Vivekananda Society and himself. And so there is some bit of division there, but it shouldn't be so. Real spiritual personalities will rise above such things, but institutions oftentimes become hardened and encrusted with laws and bylaws, and lesser minds and personalities oftentimes take over. So, as is very often the case, organizations and saints don't oftentimes commingle. But we should look for those saints wherever we find them. We should feel that love of God flowing through our hearts. And what we experience of divinity within is the same substance that the guru feels within him or herself. And so, when you feel that substance of God within you, you are one with the guru, and the guru is one with you. As I say, the guru relationship is mysterious. You have to go into the mystery of it. You have to go into the experience of it. But if you do, you will find such wonders, such revelations, such joy and such love that you will scarce believe that it is possible and what God and Guru have given to you. This is my wish for you, my blessing for you on this beautiful day, and that you take these teachings to heart, you employ them, put them into practice, and that you rise to that highest state of realization where you know that God and Guru and you are one. All one, joining in the three rivers of your spirit, Guru's spirit, and God's spirit into one ocean, vast ocean of existence. If you'll join me in prayer, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of God's glorious presence in every part of my being. May our love overfill our hearts and souls and flow out to this world in joyous expectation. In the transformation of this world. May we be blessed in this work and know it always as our true work and true purpose of life. To you, the great spirit within you, the omniscience, omnipresence, omnipotence of the divine, ever dwelling within your heart and soul. Om Tat Sat. Father, Son, Holy Ghost.